Welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Like the little engine that could, a small bureau of the Commerce Department has been helping distressed areas of the United States get back on their feet. The Economic Development Administration has just a couple of hundred people, but as Assistant Commerce Secretary for Economic Development Jay Williams notes, the agency has a long history, just having celebrated its 50th anniversary.
It was in August of 1965 that President Lyndon Johnson signed the Economic Development Act and Public Works Act into law, which created EDA. So while not a household name, we have certainly had a history of working in communities across this country. Our mission is to help facilitate economic opportunity in distressed communities, both urban and rural. And the fact that we've been doing that for 50 years, I think, speaks volumes to the importance of the agency. And we've had and enjoyed bipartisan support over the years. So, again, not a household name. We'd certainly like that to change. But we've been around for 50 years and are looking forward and are proud of that past, but also very much looking forward to the very relevant role we continue to play now and into the future.
So in creating those opportunities, is the main mechanism grants?
The main mechanism is grants. We make investments in the public good. We don't work or make investments in businesses directly, but we work with public entities, communities. We work with nonprofits. We work with universities. And I've always held that a government doesn't create jobs. So we're not a job creating agency, but what we do is create and help create an environment that ultimately is attracting that private investment. So by making those public investments in infrastructure, by making those public investments in helping communities to plan their economic future, we create that environment that ultimately makes it that much more attractive for that private capital coming in. That's when jobs are created, when individuals put capital at risk, when they have good ideas for services or products. Manufacturing, again, is a big part of what we do. So it's exciting to be a part of an agency that works with communities that are near and dear to my heart, both urban and rural, and that's really the basis of our existence.
Give us an example of how this might work. First of all, how do you identify the areas that are worthy? And then
Certainly.
What is the mechanism? What is the chain of events that happens?
That's a great question. We use a set of criteria based on economic indicators, whether it's unemployment, significant job loss, and those communities that meet that criteria are then deemed eligible for economic development assistance. We have at the basis of our relationship with our communities is what's called a CEDS. It's a Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. That is a plan put forward by the community that lays out their priorities, that lays out the players on the ground, that lays out some of the assets and the challenges that exist in that community or that region. Once that plan is established and approved, and we assist the communities in putting together those plans, but we don't dictate what should be in the plans. We give them a set of parameters. That then helps us guide the type of investment or the type of assistance that a community would need. And these are both applicable to urban and rural communities. And we work with the communities large and small across the country. So that CEDS document is exceptionally important, and it forms, again, the basis of the relationship with EDA, and then allows us to move forward in terms of evaluating the types of investments. And those investments aren't dictated from the top down. We have a very bottoms-up strategy. It's very collaborative. It's very inclusive. But then from there, then we can build on the type of assistance that EDA provides.
And what are the types of assistance that might be possible in a community once the CED says, yeah, we deserve this?
Absolutely. First and foremost, the basic assistance we can provide is planning assistance. So not only the establishment of the CEDS, but planning for a more diverse economic future. If it's a community that suffered an immediate impact or a significant job loss, talking about the diversification of the economy, talking about other assets and investments that might be needed in the public good. Other types of assistance that we provide are infrastructure. Again, investing in the public good of the community that positions that community to be more economically competitive.
There might be a grant, say, to improve sewers or water.
Absolutely.
Or maybe fix a bridge or something.
Absolutely. All connected to economic viability. Now, we don't make investments that are only beneficial to one particular company. Let's say a community said, hey, we have one company that needs these public investments. Our investments have to benefit a broad array of economic opportunity or economic activity.
So no off-ramps for stadiums and that kind of
stadiums.
Thing.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. But because of the nature of the agency, we do have a great deal of flexibility. So an economic development project or priority in one community may be significantly different than another community. So we do things like helping communities prepare for industrial parks, for manufacturing, but we also have communities that are very dependent on tourism. So we look at those communities and try to make sure that our investments are applicable to those communities. We also get into things such as investing in incubators and accelerators for those communities that are looking to position themselves to be more entrepreneurially oriented. We work with universities. Universities are often a very strong asset, and they provide a lot of intellectual and capacity to communities. So we have a universities program where the universities partner with the communities to provide additional economic guidance. So it's an agency with a great deal of flexibility. In fact, I'm often happy to say that we are the only federal agency whose mission is solely devoted to economic development. There are virtually every federal agency has a component of economic development, but only EDA is the agency whose mission is solely focused on economic development.
And I wanted to ask you just a question about that incubators and accelerators, because so many of them are focused on software, and that seems to be a great asset to invest in because software is not time or place dependent.
That's correct. And we do. We invest in incubators and accelerators that do focus on startups focused on software, but I'd also am excited to say that we have incubators that are focused on food processing because, not every incubator, and that's often people say incubator, they think high tech, and that is a very solid, significant component of incubator investments. But we have areas of the country that are based in food sciences and food processing. So we have incubators focused on that. We have incubators focused on a whole variety of things. So that's, I think, also speaks to the importance of the diversifying the local economic base and focusing on those strengths. We don't try to tell a community it should replicate what's going on in other communities. Whatever assets that community has, whatever opportunities that community has, we try to be flexible enough to help craft a plan that will allow them to capitalize on those assets and those strengths.
We're speaking with Jay Williams, Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development. And judging from the website, it looks like you also invest in training to provide people that might be useful to industries that are already there. I saw some references to, say, jet engine manufacturing, an established high-tech business, but it needs people. So tell us about that a little bit.
Workforce development, that's a great point. Workforce development is a key part of what we focus on, but we do that through a partnership, specifically through a partnership with the U.S. Department of Labor. For the first time in the history of the Department of Commerce, Secretary Pritzker has raised workforce development or skills to be one of the driving forces of the economic agenda in DOC. She's working with her counterpart, Secretary of Labor Tom Perez. So the Labor Department actually invests money in the programs, will invest money in the facilities. And when you bring those two things together, there are a number of great examples across the country where we've worked with the community to help construct a facility where then the Labor Department dollars are coming in to fund programs that are very job-specific, job-driven training. In the past, the federal government has made investments, and Tom Perez, Secretary Perez, says our approach in the past has been to train and pray, to train and then pray and hope that there are some jobs out there that match the training and the skills that we've invested in. And that's just really a backwards approach. So under this administration, under the president's leadership, and certainly with the leadership of Secretary Pritzker and Secretary Perez, the employers, the job creators are at the table. They are articulating the types of skills that they need in their workforce. We are then making sure that the investments that we make are completely aligned with those skills. So to your point, whether it's high-tech manufacturing for aircraft, the automotive industry, the software industry, whatever it happens to be, when we make those investments, they're made based on the needs of the employer, both today and for the foreseeable future.
I was looking at the photo galleries of the agency up to 1990 and since 1990, and both of them have automotive work. Back in the 50s, 60s, it was labor
that
was needed to build cars. Today, it's totally automated, the production. The skills are utterly different, yet the people need skill.
The people need skills. And what the automotive employers are saying today is they want people with critical thinking skills. Back in the times you talked about and where I'm from, if you had a strong work ethic and a strong back, that's all you needed. You could come out with a 7th or 8th grade education and go make a great living and raise your family and work there for 20 or 30 years. Those days, by and large, are gone. So there is still a need for labor. But what the employers are saying is we want people who are able to critically think, people who are able to collaborate, people who see a problem and don't just say, well, it's not within my job description, but can offer approaches to address that problem. That's the type of training that's going on today. And that's where we've seen, and it's ironic that you would bring up the automotive industry, because as we all recall, the earliest days of this administration, the president had to make a critical decision where we're going to let the automotive industry collapse in and on itself and destroy an additional million plus jobs, or were we going to make the investment, not just in the industry itself, but in the American worker? The president made that call. And as a result, we have now seen all three of the U.S. automakers, domestic three, profitable, making world-class vehicles. We're seeing the sales out the roof, and we're seeing them return investment back to this country. But at the core of that are skilled workers who are really helping to drive that success.
And do you find that in today, in the 21st century, it seems like the phenomenon has arisen where there is really poverty, literally across a county line from a place that might be very affluent. I'm thinking of Detroit, for example.
Absolutely.
Almost laid waste, you know, by what happened in the car industry. You cross the line to, say, West Bloomfield, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're in an affluent suburb or
right.
Grosse Pointe Farms or whatever it might be. How does that interplay?
There is still too much inequality, and that's one of the things the president has said, as we've seen a remarkable recovery that we can talk about as a part of this discussion. There's still more work to be done. And when you talk about that economic inequality that can be just a few blocks away, and when you talk about it in Detroit, you can talk about it where I'm from in Youngstown, Ohio. That's why there's a continued focus on making sure that the skills that are necessary to help those individuals in those areas that are still impoverished, that are still struggling, are able to tap into the economic opportunities. It's also why we focus on regions. I have said it time and time again when I was mayor, as Secretary of Economic Development, that you cannot outpace the core of the region, that we cannot have affluent areas that are surrounding impoverished areas and somehow think that we are doing a good job. That those issues that are surrounding, whether it's Detroit or Youngstown or Gary, Indiana, those are historic cities that provided the infrastructure, that provided the capital that was needed for the wealth and prosperity that we're seeing today. So now that we go through these economic cycles, there is an obligation to make sure that we address the fundamental issues in those communities and not say, well, those are cities of a bygone era, so, you know, good luck with trying to figure them out. There's an obligation. This president is committed to making sure that there's regional prosperity, regional economic opportunity.
And let me just ask you a programmatic detail question. Suppose you have a political jurisdiction like a county where within that jurisdiction, which has the same government, mm-hmm. but you have really affluent areas and really rough, poor areas. And that's frankly happening in some of the counties surrounding affluent D.C. or within D.C. itself. Are those poor areas eligible for assistance and development of a SEDS, even though the same jurisdiction might have some affluent areas?
That's a great question. That's one of the great things about EDA is our flexibility. We can go down to the census tract level. So in the example that you provided, you can have a county that may, based on its economic data, not be eligible, but there may be census tracts or areas within that county that are eligible. We can zero in and hone in on those areas. They are eligible for economic development assistance and then assisting them, because that's what you find. You don't find uniform economic equality or opportunity across this country. So to the extent that we can be flexible and hone in on those areas, they absolutely are eligible for EDA assistance.
Let's talk about the agency itself, the infrastructure of the EDA. Tell us about, first of all, the human capital plans, how big you are and the types of skills and what you do to make sure the right talent is in place.
Sure. First, let me say the greatest asset that the Economic Development Administration has are our people. We have 6 regional offices and a headquarters here in Washington, D.C. In those 6 regional offices, EDA has a total of about 200 employees. 2/3 of the employees are distributed through our 6 regional offices. And those regional offices really are charged with overseeing all 50 states in the U.S. territories. And the people there are amongst the best and the brightest and the most passionate when it comes to working with communities, working with local officials and local stakeholders. And the thing that I enjoy most about that is because we don't sit in Washington, D.C. and try to determine what's in the best interest of folks in Des Moines, Iowa, or, in New Braunfels, Texas. We have our staff on the ground feeling the pulse of what's going on in that community. They are there seeing the economic trends as they happen very early on. They are there sometimes preempting some of those economic trends. So that structure allows us to make sure that we are covering in real time the economic challenges and opportunities that exist in the communities that we serve.
And do you have a situation where a lot of people retiring, as so many smaller agencies do, or do you find that if graduates and people from private industry who are not at the end of their careers want to come to work there?
There's a lot of interest and excitement about working at EDA. We certainly have our challenges as a small agency. We have people who have been at the agency there's one or two employees who have been there 50 years. They were there at the creation of EDA, and we have employees who have just joined us. That is a challenge because as we face hiring in the federal government, that can always be a challenge. Getting people in, attracting the best and the brightest. But I'm proud to say that we are actively making sure that those key positions are filled, that the service that we provide to the communities happens in an uninterrupted fashion. We are adding staff at appropriate level in each of the 6 regions. And the goal is, again, to have the majority of the staff out in the regions, not to have Washington, D.C. headquarters overstaffed. That being said, we've got a great team in Washington, D.C. that works very closely in helping to manage the agency. But We are in the process of bringing folks on and replacing people through retirement. We have been understaffed for a great period of time, and I think that that speaks to the efficiency at which the agency runs, that without the full authorized staffing level, we've still continued to provide those services. But we're working to make sure we invest in our people that ultimately are working and investing in the communities across the country.
So about 600 full-time altogether?
Oh, no. When I say 200 total.
Oh, 200
across
in total,
the agency, right.
A third is in Washington.
A third is in Washington, and two-thirds are in the six regional offices.
You are a small agency.
We're a small agency with a big impact.
And so what is the type of IT and other support apparatus that you have for being such a small agency? Do you just live off commerce information technology, or how does that work?
Commerce provides, and that's a great question. We do have a shared services agreement with the Department of Commerce, and they provide us with a great deal of support. Being a small agency, we don't want to take our resources and have to duplicate and invest in technological infrastructure that we can piggyback on the Department of Commerce. So Secretary Prisker and the staff there have done a great job in making sure that Commerce, as the mother agency, provides a great deal of support so we can then focus our resources not in having to buy and purchase technology, but making sure that those resources go into the communities. That being said, we do obviously have a staff that is very technologically adept that provides the tools necessary to allow us to be more efficient in the process that we make our grant investments. We use technological programming and other tools, but at the end of the day, we exist in an environment of shared resources that allows us really to focus on the needs of the community and not have to focus an inordinate amount of our time or energy or effort on some of the tools that deliver those products.
And what's the rough value of the grants that flow through EDA each year?
It varies. Our infrastructure grants can be upwards of $2 or $3 million, just depending on the project. We have grant investment levels, so we do require a matching investment from the community. So some communities are eligible for a 50% grant rate. So on a $5 million project, obviously, there are sometimes we can invest upwards of $2.5 million. For Indian tribes or severely economically distressed communities, we can go up to 80%. And actually for Indian tribes, we can go up to 100% grant rate. So it really just depends on the project. We tailor the investment to the needs of the community. Some communities are, projects that in one community, the entire project might be $750,000, which can be a game-changing project. And in another community, it might take significantly more. So that flexibility, I think, is one of the assets that we also bring to the table when working with those communities.
So is the total each year the billion-dollar order of magnitude, $100 million?
That's great. Our total budget is about $255 million, the vast majority of which is dedicated toward our EDAP programs, our Economic Development Assistance Programs. A fraction of that goes, obviously, to salaries, administrative expenses, but we look to keep that a very minor part of our budget. So the vast majority of our $250 million goes out in investments, and it's in the scheme of things, it's not a lot of money. We would always like to see more. And at one point, EDA was close to a $1 billion agency. But what we also do is leverage. We work with other federal agencies to bring to bear their economic development resources. And as we talk about the future of EDA, one of the things that we're most excited about is the fact that we have been designated as an agency that is going to be integrating other federal economic development resources. Federal government spends about $17 billion annually in economic development investments. If a fraction of that flows through EDA, we still have a great deal of expertise that's going to help to leverage those other federal agencies. So it's an exciting opportunity.
And since the passage of the stimulus bill in 2009, the administration has been emphasizing performance and metrics and measurement of both contracted dollars and grant dollars. What mechanisms in place do you have to oversee the grants that go out and make sure that they are used correctly and that they produce the performance that was hoped for?
Actually, we have a division, the Performance and National Programs Division within EDA, who is charged with that very task to make sure that the investments that we make are attracting the private dollars, the job creation numbers that the communities commit to are being realized. And we are very sensitive to the fact that we have to be a good steward of taxpayer dollars. These are our dollars, too, as taxpayers, but we have to be a great steward of those taxpayer dollars to make sure that those communities that make those commitments are living up to those commitments. We understand that there are things that happen that are beyond our control or beyond the community's control. We work with those communities, but this isn't simply we make an investment and then move on and never look back to make sure that those numbers are being realized. And I think that's what we are all proud of, is the fact that when you look at the track record of the investments of the Economic Development Agency, by and large, you see the job creation numbers being met. You see private investment going 3 and 4 and 5 times the public investment. And when you have those communities that are standing up saying, because of EDA investment, we now have seen a significant growth in our economic base. We have seen significant private investment. We have seen more jobs being created as a result of us being more globally and economically competitive. I think that speaks volumes. So our P&P division does a very good job in tracking those numbers.
We're speaking with Jay Williams, the Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development. And I wanted to talk about Jay Williams for just a moment because you were the mayor of Youngstown, Ohio.
That's correct.
And so you have that political experience, but you also have experience growing up and administering an area that might be the recipient of EDA grants and so forth. What did you learn there, and what was it like to be mayor of a city like that?
First of all, there was no better training for what I'm doing now than to have served as mayor of my hometown of Youngstown, Ohio. And we talked about this a little bit off the air, that this is more than a job to me. This is a passion. This is something that I enjoy doing because having been born and reared in Youngstown, Ohio, having been in that community when it was at its very economic worst, or amongst the years of its most economic severely condition, and now to see, as a result of investments from the Economic Development Administration, as a result of collaboration, as a result of visioning and planning, to see the story of Youngstown, Ohio being redefined. It was recently named as one of a community that has one of the top incubator in the world, university affiliated incubator in the world. That came about partially as a result of EDA investments. To see it named as one of the top 10 places to start a business a few years ago by Entrepreneur Magazine. Still lots of challenges and struggles in the region, but it's a city that is no longer being defined by its failures. And to then now be able to do that at a national level and to work with those communities, what it does is gives me a credibility that when we're on the ground in a community, they can't just say, well, you know, you're a guy from Washington, D.C., what do you know about economically distressed communities? You know, when I say I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, people say, okay, well, this guy kind of knows what he's talking about. He's lived it. And again, it's a collaborative effort. EDA has been there for 50 years for places like Youngstown and so many other urban and rural places across the country. So to work with the staff that I have to be able to do that as a job and get paid for it is something that I don't take for granted. And to be a part of this administration, both from the president, obviously, down through the Secretary of Commerce, and to see the level of support they've committed to EDA, I think speaks volumes to the commitment to making sure that we build a resilient U.S. economy in these communities across the country.
All right. So let's conclude with some of the planning processes that happen in EDA. How do you plan the future, and sure, what are the plans now for 2016 and beyond?
We are excited about 2016. The president has admonished us to make sure that we run through the tape. This is the last year of the Obama administration, and we are going to work in 2016 to institutionalize so many of the approaches that have helped to rebuild this economy. Our focus on manufacturing, we've got investing in manufacturing community partnerships across the country that help to solidify the gains we've seen in manufacturing. We're excited about this year. We're going to have a national conference. We have not had a national conference on Economic Development Administration in almost 8 years.
That's in April,
That's
right?
In
April,
Washington. In Washington, D.C. So we're excited about that. We're excited about, again, the fact that we have an opportunity to become an integrator. I talked about the $17 billion that the federal government invests in economic development throughout the course of a year. The fact that the Economic Development Administration is going to be at the center of that, helping to break down those barriers from HUD to EPA to Department of Transportation, and make sure we're focusing, when a federal government invests economic development dollars in a particular community, EDA serving as an integrator, as a leader, to make sure that those conversations and that those dollars are leveraged as much as possible, I think is important. So it's going to be an exciting year. It's going to be a busy year. The secretary has set forward a very aggressive open for business agenda, whether it's trade or manufacturing or the integration role. It's going to be a busy year for EDA, and we want to make sure that those of us who are political appointees leave the agency better off when we found it, because it's really the career staff that are going to carry these initiatives forward. So, you know, whatever the next administration looks like, U.S. manufacturing has rebounded significantly. The job numbers, we'll conclude on that. The jobs numbers that came out demonstrate that this has been one of the greatest economic recoveries since 1999. We've added 2.65 million jobs just last year in 2015. Almost 300,000 jobs were created last December. We have seen unemployment topple from 10% to less than 5%, nearing full employment based on the economic indicators. So it's an exciting year, and we've got more work to do.
And so will you go back to Youngstown or stay in Washington like the rest of those walks?
I have no idea. Whatever I do, I hope to continue to be involved in working with communities that are evolving, communities like Youngstown, like Pittsburgh, like Cleveland, you name them, urban communities, rural communities. It's something that is near and dear to my heart. So wherever I end up, group I hope to continue to have my hand involved in and work with, the type of people that I work with at the Economic Development Administration.
Jay Williams is Assistant Commerce Secretary for Economic Development. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.